Talk Shoes.
Recorded live.
You're listening to the Geocaching Podcast, a podcast about everything geocaching, where you'll hear tips and tricks, interviews with cachers, and lots more. Welcome, everybody, to episode 14 of the Geocaching Podcast. Today, we're going to be talking a little bit about how to plant an event cache. With us, we have Daryl W4 and Firefly03 of the Cachemaniacs podcast, because they've placed plenty of event caches. So we have them on the line with us. But first, before we get to that, last week we talked a little bit about the Cacher Stats website. I emailed the guy, and he emailed me back because I was a little concerned about what caches he takes for the stats. So he emailed me back, and he told me that what he takes is basically 95% of the time, anyone who's had 200 finds or more, he ends up having a cache that they've hit. So he said it usually changes quite a bit from, you know, even week to week, what caches that he pulls for the records that he has. So he said he'd be willing to send me a list of them, but it'd be outdated as soon as he sent them to me. So he didn't send them to me, but he did say that it was fairly... a good chunk of the cachers were included, and that I should email him if I should be on the list and wasn't. However, like I said, I was not on the list because I don't have over 200 finds. So, but I was happy with his response. He told me, you know, basically that I would definitely be on the list if I had 200 finds or more. So with that, let's get on to today's topic about how to plant a event cache. Welcome to the show, Cachemaniacs, guys.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Thanks.
Introduce yourself a little bit more and tell us a little bit more about yourself briefly.
All right. This is Daryl Wanberg, known as Daryl W4, and across the table from me is my co-host, Adrian Scholl.
My name actually is Adrian, but I actually have a nickname I go by, which is Dre, which is actually short for the Adrian, and my caching name is Firefly03.
Me and my wife actually had the privilege to meet you guys a couple of weeks ago. We were actually in Detroit, so we got to sit down and talk with you. So that's when I had the idea, actually, of having you guys on the show, because I know that you guys have planted a lot of event caches and had a lot of event caches with your Cachemaniacs and your Coffee Coins and Sigs events. Can you tell me a little bit more about, tell me a little bit more in brief what an event cache is. Maybe some of our listeners don't know what an event cache is. Can you tell me a little bit more about what an event cache is?
Okay. An event cache is basically just a get-together. It can range from anything like a picnic to sitting down and have coffee to just, you know, having dinner and then going off and caching. Some of them always, or I shouldn't say always, but some of them do have games. Most of them always have food. But Daryl and I have found that if you don't really have food, it tends to make people mingle a little bit more, and it's easier to talk with somebody because you're not talking with a mouthful of food.
Mm-hmm. So what you guys have done is you've created your Coffee Coins and Sigs event. Tell me a little bit about that and what that looks like.
Well, Coffee Coins and Sigs is basically just a little get-together, and like Dre was saying earlier, when we were planning these events, we really wanted something that encouraged people to get together, mingle, get to know each other. So we decided we didn't want a food event. So we scheduled these for the afternoon, set it up as an open house so you could come and go as you pleased. And most of the people, I'd say, do stick around for the full 4 hours. Some stick around for 3. And we do get a few people in and out. But it's a great event because you just get to come in, you drink some coffee if you like coffee, but most people actually go for the pop and water, and talk about coins and signature items.
That's a really cool idea. I like that idea. Tell us a little bit more, like, what was your first event cache that you placed?
Well, that would actually be the first Coffee Coins and Sigs, and I'll go into the planning on that one a little bit, which was kind of a nightmare. I had signed up for a local coffee shop. Their max seating in the facility was 55 people, and we told them it would be about 40 to 50 people. 2 weeks before the event, we had about 30, maybe 40 people who had signed up that they were coming, and that was about it. A week before the event, we had like one or two more people that signed up, and it was looking pretty good. Well, a week after that, 2 days before the event, all the logs started coming in. And before we knew it, we had about 100 people that signed up for the event, and the facility certainly couldn't handle it. So at the last minute, we had to bounce to a different facility. We actually got lucky and rented the clubhouse here at our apartment complex, had the event here, and in a little over a day had to scramble around, change all the plans, and I did actually admit have a backup plan in mind, but I didn't expect to have to throw it together in a day. I expected to have at least a week. So we kind of got lucky that I did have a backup plan there, and we're able to throw it together that quickly.
So what would you say if someone wants to host an event cache, what would be their very first thing that they'd want to do to get started?
Well, the very first thing would be to figure out what type of event you're looking for. There's a lot of the meet and greets that do that over dinner or lunch or whatever, and those are great events. You know, we like those events as well, but it's more of a get-together for people who already know each other. You sit together at your tables. You don't have much of a chance to move around. So that's the bulk of the meet and greet events. There's a few of them like ours where you grab a hall or whatever. You know, if you can find a coffee shop, it's great. But a lot of coffee shops don't really like people sitting around that long. So they tend not to cooperate as much as I'd like. But those are great events, and you can pick, you know, that kind of meet and greet. But then there's also the bigger events where it's like a day-long event, and that's usually you pick a park or something like that, and you do more games and those kind of things. And those really do take a lot more planning than just a simple meet and greet. So probably for your first event, you're going to want to set up just a meet and greet. You can find a local restaurant that would host it, and you know, Panera's are really good for that. They like to have the people come in for an hour or two, hopefully get some food and coffee and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. So after picking your location, what would you do next?
Well, next you're going to want to list the event, and that involves, you know, picking a date, which can be a little bit tough because you want to make sure that you don't have any major events or sporting events included or other major geocaching events in the area around that time. So you pick your date, pick your time, and then you go and list it, and that's not too complicated. It's pretty much just like listing any other event, or I'm sorry, any other cache that you'd be listing normally. And just put some descriptions, make sure that you give people good parking coordinates if the parking isn't right out front of the door.
Now, do you find that, I know you said that you expect a little bit more people than usually show up that sign up for the cache page, but do you find that you get, like, how many more people would you, as a rule of thumb, would you say, like, say, if 20 people signed up to say that they would attend, how many people do you think would show up?
That's kind of hard to say, but as a rule of thumb, we've kind of found that about 5% don't show up, but another 10% will show up that didn't sign up.
So almost double what you have then, or signed up.
No, okay, gotcha. We'll lose about 5% of the people who signed up. You know, let's say we had 50 people sign up. Two or three of those people aren't going to show up, but we'll get 10 more people than we expected.
Okay, gotcha there. I gotcha. Now, do you find that you're pulling from, like, your local area for most of your events, or do you find people driving and from a good distance?
You know, it really depends on the event. We've had some events where we got just much, much broader range than we ever could have hoped for. And then we've had some events that are very, very local. Our first Coffee, Coins, and Sigs event was pretty much just the local community. You know, it was a coffee shop kind of event, so we didn't draw a whole lot of people. But the Cachemaniacs launch event, we did get people from, I think our furthest south was Florida, and I should probably remind people we are here in the Detroit area in Michigan. And then we got people from New York and, I don't remember where else.
We also had somebody from Colorado.
Oh, Colorado, yeah. But, yeah, we did have a number of people come in from other regions, but a lot of that was also we had that event near the New Year's holiday. So people were in town visiting friends and family anyway. You know, they had the time off work, so it made it easy for them to stop by. And then we did have people driving in from Ohio, and I think we had one person from Indiana at that one.
We also had some from Canada.
and we had some from northern Michigan, which is actually further, I think, than coming in from like the Fort Wayne area.
Wow, so you guys did pull people from pretty much everywhere for that event.
Yeah, and that event, if people didn't see the launch event video on our stream, we had food and everything. That was a big event, and that was a costly event, too. A lot of fun, well worth it. We had a blast, but boy, did we pack the room. We did not expect anywhere close to the number of people showing up at that event that we actually did.
How many people did you have show up for that event?
I think the final total was 74 plus the two of us, so 76 people total, which actually is a little bit less than I think actually had signed up for it on the event page that morning.
Yeah, I think we had 81 people signed up for the event. So
we did have a couple of people that showed up at, what was it, 4 o'clock, and the event didn't start at, until 7, and at that point we had gone for our lunch break.
So when you guys plant a cache or an event cache, do you find, like for your event, your meet and greet that you had for your Cache Maniacs launch event, do you have, like, door prizes, and do you have, like, a schedule of things? Like, how to walk me through how that one went. You walked me through a little bit on the coffee coins and cigs, but walk me through how your actual, like, meet and greet type went. Like, did you have a schedule for that, and what did that look like?
Well, we'll go through both a little bit. We'll start off with the launch event, because that was actually very, very loose and informal as far as that goes. And then for that event, we actually gave away swag bags. So everyone that came through the door picked up a bag with a minimum of 2 geocoins and some other cool swag items, including some of them had little cash containers like the little mini lock and locks and pencils and trinkets of all kinds. So that one, we didn't have any door prizes. But that one, we did have music set up with a PA system, and we had our wireless microphones. And I should also note that the hall that we rented for that one, we also used as a studio earlier in the day and had a few people come in for interviews. And in what is about 3 or 4 days, you'll actually see the first of those interviews on the feed as our Team Legend 4, which is our caching buddies that we go out with all the time, actually. But that will hit the feed then, and you'll get to see that same room converted to a studio for us. So we had all the gear there for doing the video and used that same gear as our PA system. So we pumped music through at a very low level because you don't want the music to drown out the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had the mics pumped up so that when we wanted to get people's attention, we could. And with a crowd that size, we didn't get to do quite as much as we had planned on, but we did have a rough schedule set up, you know, allowing a certain amount of time to mingle. We had planned on doing a little bit of a toast, but because we had so many people in the room, we couldn't get around with the drinks, so we skipped the toast and just went to a little announcement. And about an hour, I think it was, after we had planned on kicking everyone out, we were torn out and out of the room.
Wow, that's pretty impressive.
And then for the Coffee Coins and Cigs event, we do a whole bunch of different types of door prizes on that one.
For the Coffee Coins and Cigs, excuse me, we normally have a prize table. We supply a majority of the prizes, but there are a lot of people who bring prizes along. It's not mandatory that you bring prizes, but if you want to, you can. And the way we do the drawing is normally we end up doing one about every 15 minutes. You have to be present to go in, and just about everybody who comes ends up walking out with a prize. We also do a major prize, which the past two on Coffee Coins and Cigs we did, which count the coffee beans. We had a jar with coffee beans filled in it, which I counted beforehand, and everybody guessed how many there was. The one that was closest won the big prize.
And we find that a lot of people do really enjoy bringing prizes for the prize table.
Yep.
So that is a good thing to do. And it really does get people a little bit more involved, and they like that. And especially when everyone walks home with a prize, they like that.
Yeah,
that is pretty cool. What overall, like in general, what do people bring for the prize table when they bring stuff?
There's a lot of variety. Sometimes people will bring swag for the coffee coins and cigs. A lot of people bring coins. Daryl and I normally donate some coffee, some fresh roasted coffee.
Mm-hmm.
We've had books. We've had flashlights. We've had cash containers, first aid kits.
Blankets.
Blankets, books.
Yeah, homemade blankets. Those
yes.
were nice.
Yes.
Wow, it sounds like you guys have a really cool stuff to win.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and we do have a following for those events now. We're only on our fourth event now,
fourth.
I think, coming
yeah.
up. Yeah. And we just scheduled that one this week, actually, for August 25th. And that's going to be at the Roseville Parks and Rec Center, which we did last year for our fall event. And we like teaming up with those guys because that is one community that's really behind the geocaching. So it's really nice to go and enjoy a Parks and Rec facility where they really do back the geocachers.
The majority.
Do you have a GC number for that event?
Yes.
Absolutely. Dree, you're hosting that one
yes.
technically, so why don't you give that?
The GC for that one is GC12YX8. And like Daryl was saying with Roseville, they're really great with being geocaching friendly. Matter of fact, the majority of their parks have caches that they've actually placed too.
Okay. That's cool. How often do your Coffee Coins and SIGs events, like how often do you plan them?
We normally do them twice a year. We do one in the spring and one in the fall.
Okay. Have you ever had any like bad like stories that you want to tell, like things that have happened or like you, at the last minute you, besides the one where you had to change it to your hall at your apartment, but do you have any other like stories that of things that happened during an event cache?
Well, I'm sure we can come up with one for, at least for each of the events. Every time
mm-hmm.
we do that, we learn something new and we try to tweak something so that it works a little bit better. The
mm-hmm.
last one that we did, we learned that we really do need to have some kind of PA system. It was the first of the events where we, no, actually it was the second of the events, but it was the first event where we had people in multiple rooms too, which really ended up being a problem. So if you can, try to get everyone in one room, because if they're in two rooms, they can't hear you. Not
mm-hmm.
unless you get a bigger PA system set up. So that was one of the big things that we found. And it is a real problem if you don't have some kind of audio broadcast device, whether it's a bullhorn or a PA system. Obviously, you know, PA system would be preferable. And
mm-hmm.
you know, a lot of people that I've known who do this will actually just even bring their home stereo system. As long as you have some kind of mixer or preamp where you can plug a microphone into it, and even
mm-hmm.
some of the tape decks, you know, not many people I know have tape decks anymore, but even those in many cases will support a microphone. So you can plug in the microphone even to your tape deck, pump it through your stereo so you can go cheap, you know, boombox, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just have something so that people can hear you and you're not screaming and people in the back can still hear.
What?
Firefly, do you have
Well, another thing that we found out, too, especially with this last one, is you want room for people to be able to walk around. There's a lot of people who don't sit down. They're out mingling with other people. They're walking over to people's other coin collections and flipping through the pages. Other people are looking at signature items. So there's not a lot of people who actually sit down.
And what that's typically called, if you're going to rent the room, they'll typically call that kind of arrangement a dance floor arrangement. You'll have a few tables around the outside of the room with the chairs, but the center of the room is just left open so that people can mingle about. You know, no one's going to be dancing, I hope. But
you know. Unless
you're having a Coffee Coins and Dancing event, maybe.
Yeah, we'll add another section in next time for the breakdance.
I don't know. I think I did break out into dance one time. You don't want to see that.
Yeah, it's when you get those extremely rare coin trades.
you've heard the first to find dance. This is a rare coin dance.
do you guys, as hosts, do you find that it's easy for you to be around to everybody, or do you find that you kind of feel like you're being pulled everywhere at once as a host, or do you find it fairly easy to kind of relax and take it in too, or do you find that you're uptight and have to like feel like you have to be everywhere?
Well, as the host of the events, we definitely feel like we have to try to manage the event, but not too tightly. Typically for our events, we'll have one of us sitting at the door, and sometimes we'll trade off someone just there to greet everyone and to get them to sign in. And we do have the sign-ins. Most of the time what we've been doing is just using the raffle tickets as a sign-in. And then
mm-hmm.
the other person will be mingling around.
So you use the raffle tickets to give away your prizes usually?
The raffle tickets are used to get rid of the give the prizes out, and also as a sign-in.
Gotcha.
So it's a dual function. There is some pressure to, or at least on me, to be able to go around and at least try to say hi to everybody. It's almost impossible to do, though, so it's kind of one of those things. But I've noticed, too, that the more of these we do, the more people tend to come to find me to say hi.
Yeah, and it does.
Why do you think that is?
It does get easier when you do more and more of these events because you do become more recognized and people expect, you know, that you're there, and if they need you, they can find you.
Yeah.
And, you know, most people will come up and say hi to the host of the event and thank them. We did have one interesting problem that I just remembered with the launch event was we had a whole bunch of people trying to email us asking if they could bring stuff to the event.
Yeah.
You know, which is a nice problem to have, but we had that food table packed so tightly that we really didn't want anything else for that one.
Mm-hmm.
And we overplanned that. And that's one of the other suggestions, too, is really try to overplan.
Yes.
It's better to have, especially with things like water, it's better to have way too much water and take a case of water home than to run out of water and have people walking around the event drinking pop if they don't want pop or, you know, something else, or not drinking anything at all, which is really bad.
Another thing we do, too, is we watch out for other people's needs in the fact of sugar. There's a lot of people who won't eat sugar, so we have sugar substitutes. And there's people who can't have cream, so we have the what we refer to as the fake cream. So we do try to watch out for other people's needs.
Yeah, the non-dairy creamers.
Yeah. So as long as you think out of the box and basically overplan, things always seem to tend to go pretty well for us.
Yeah, and if you're doing the food events, that even applies to food, where a lot of people don't like pizza, for instance. So if you have an event at a pizza place, make sure they have something other than pizza for the people who don't eat pizza.
Make sure there's some vegetarian option. There's a lot of people who are allergic to peanuts. So it takes most of the larger ones into consideration, and you'll end up having a lot of people coming up to you afterwards and saying, you know, I'm really glad you thought about this.
Now, would you say it's important, say I have never hosted an event, would you say it's important for me to find someone who has hosted an event and maybe host my first event with that person so that I can kind of get an idea of what it looks like?
It certainly does not hurt, but I don't think it's mandatory. Our first event, we hadn't ever hosted a geocaching event, but we did have some experience hosting our own parties, and I actually had some convention hosting experience. So we had some experience going into it that made it easier for us.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you had parties in your backyard, for instance, and those came off successfully, you probably can pull off a geocaching event without too many problems.
Yeah. And if you're not the party planning type, I recommend going to at least a few of these events before you try to host your own, too. That way you kind of get a feel for other ideas, too.
And there are the bigger events that are really good if you're not so familiar with hosting an event, because those events typically have a whole bunch of different people doing a whole bunch of different jobs. For instance, you might have one person who's responsible for just organizing the food. Rather than hosting the whole event, you just get in there and help with the food prep, or you place caches, plan games, you know, pass out game pieces if, you know, for, you know, closest to the pin or something like that. So there's a whole bunch of ways to get involved first.
Okay. How would you how far out should you plan, not plan, but like list your event? Like if your event is in, you know, 2 weeks, or what's the minimum amount or that you should list your cache on the site?
That really depends, I think, a lot on the area and the time of year, especially in the peak periods, which around here are early spring, you know, late winter, early spring, and into the fall season. You need to list your events probably at least 2 months in advance. During the off season, if you list it a month in advance, you're still going to get some people there. But as a general rule, I like to list the events as soon as we can, give people as much notice not just for yourself, but to, reserve the date. Make sure that no one else grabs that date, because it's really not fun to have to try to reschedule something, especially if you're renting a hall or going to a coffee shop or something where you schedule that date and find out you have a major event that date that wasn't listed, so now you have to move it and all the other dates are taken. There's nothing worse than trying to work around that kind of situation.
All right, to wrap up here, in a few words, what would you say is the most important thing to remember while placing an event cache?
The most important? Think of your guests.
And how?
Put them first, put their needs first, and trying to help make sure that they have a good time. And I think that's going to be the most successful event you can have.
And I think,
Daryl, what about yourself?
I would have to definitely say that it's the planning, and that doesn't necessarily mean planning in a written form. As long as it's your event and you don't have anyone else that you need to communicate it to, just do the planning in your head. But definitely plan as much as you can and have as many contingencies factored in as you can think of.
Okay, guys, if you want to do a quick plug for your show, go ahead and do that.
Sure, that's Cachemaniacs, and the website is at Cachemaniacs, no dashes. .com, and it's a weekly podcast with interviews with geocachers. The last episode, actually, that was just posted on the feed is kind of a change of pace for us. We actually got some stories from our listeners, and that was a whole lot of fun. But we do video and audio podcasts. Most of them are audio, and this next one is going to be a video podcast. So we'd love to have you check that podcast out if you haven't already.
All right. Thanks, guys. I'm going to go ahead and wrap up the show.
Thank you.
Some of the music on the show today was provided by the Podshow PodSafe Music Network. Check it out at music.podshow.com.